Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Today's guest is somebody who I've only been recently made aware of, but have been looking for my entire life. And he's somebody that got turned on to me from my buddy Luke Story. So thank you, Luke. Mad blessings to you, brother. You've been such an amazing ally, especially in these last 4 years. But what a great friend, what a great person that I can bounce ideas off of and learn from and share the good word with. So kudos to Luke for this intro, to Brandon Joe Williams, who is really blazing a path into Commonwealth law and to all sorts of goodies that we frequently complain about. Taxes, taxation is theft. There's no two ways about that. And of course, you know, this stimulates many arguments like, well, who will build the roads and who will educate the kids and blah, blah, blah. We're educating our kids better than any fucking public school can, by far. Probably better than most private schools can, having been in some private schools. And I do understand not everyone has the ability to afford a life for themselves where one parent cannot go to work. I get that fully. So, not saying that shit on all schools, shit on all possibilities here, shit on all of government, not saying any of that. But as you remember, I had a phenomenal podcast, the one that started it off with Mark Gober, about his book, The End to Upside Down Liberty. If you did not listen to that or read that book, I highly, highly recommend it because it really bridges the gap into this conversation. And we spoke a little bit on Commonwealth law during that podcast, but that's not Mark's specialty. Mark's specialty is actually kind of hard to track. If you understand why I've had so many podcasts with him, the guy can't stop writing books. He's a phenomenal author, and this podcast isn't about Mark Gober, but I can assure you this shows you the breadcrumbs of the trail that I've been on. At least listen to that podcast. We'll put that in the show notes here. You don't have to listen to it beforehand, but this will connect the dots for you on ways of thinking to improve or, you know, really, what is a parallel system? And as it turns out, when it comes to the law, our founding forefathers invented the parallel systems. The parallel systems have existed since the founding of this country. And in all Commonwealth countries, they already exist. The laws do not need to be rewritten. These are statutes. They're not laws. And they're not natural laws. And there are many books on the subject, but rather than drain you with more books to read, listen to this podcast. Don't freak out and say, oh man, Kingsbury's going to go to jail because he's not paying his taxes. I pay my fucking taxes as much as I have to, right? And that's somewhere in there. I forget who said that, Benjamin Franklin or something like that. I only pay as much as you're supposed to and no more. That's a paraphrase. And maybe it wasn't Franklin, but it was one of those old turds. Point being, we should all be looking for ways to pay less, and we should all be looking for ways to get our government to do their fucking job and to stop spending our money on shit they're not supposed to be spending it on. And that could be a whole year's worth of podcast in and of itself, a topic that never exhausts itself, and we could talk about that till the day we grow old. I don't think I'm going to do that. And I keep this podcast to closer to an hour and a half to 2 hours. Brandon could have kept going. What he's done is he has deep dived this subject and he's gotten it to a point now where he actually can get it all to us in about an hour and a half. I want you to, if this piques your interest, I want you to rabbit hole his website. I want you to rabbit hole his information because this is a fast track to understanding things that I've been reading about in books and talking about with guys like Jesse Elder, another great podcast we did on the subject, and really trying to fine tune where is this ability to play. How do I adopt legalese into my vocabulary and when is it appropriate to use it? And Brandon really breaks this down very eloquently and to the point. If you've never heard of Commonwealth law, this might be a little bit over your head. If you've never looked into natural law, this might be a little bit over your head. I don't imagine, you know, this podcast is not known for that. I've only had a couple of podcast guests so far that have really taken a dive into it. But if you see things the way that I've seen it since 2020, at least in part, it's a damn good idea to understand the law because what we did in 2020 broke every law we have. Emergency authorization doesn't mean shit. That's a statute. There's no law that tells me I have to put a fucking mask on. It's not constitutional. And they can go down the rabbit hole of all that and refresh everyone's memory of 4 years ago. I don't need to do that. Point being, we can't just forget that and act like it never happened. And if we don't learn from it, we're doomed to make the same mistakes. And this is where guys like Brandon Joe Williams enter into the conversation. I know you guys are going to absolutely love this podcast. Brandon is a phenomenal speaker, and he will be back on this podcast multiple times. I'm excited to introduce them to guys like Paul Check and Dr. Nathan Riley and Aubrey Marcus. Anybody that's got good podcasts to get this guy's word out, because he's really, really changing the game and doing amazing things. And he's out there. You're going to hear some shit today where it's like, whoa, really? You can do that? And apparently you can, but we'll find out. We will find out. I'm a part of the wait and see, and we'll see. You can support the show by sharing it with a friend. Word of mouth is a great way to share and get this podcast out there and turn new people onto the podcast. Also support our sponsors. They make this show possible. Absolutely love every one of these sponsors. Handpicked them all myself and my small team of podcast coordinators, the homie Jose, David, Roy, all these great guys that are looking out for me that know exactly what I'm looking at. David Desmond has been an awesome dude at finding me some amazing ones like Caldera Labs and other great ones that have come to Happy Hippo. Just incredible sponsors. So support these sponsors. At the very end here, we'll talk a little bit about fit for service, and then we'll jump right in with Brandon. Today's podcast is brought to you by EnergyBits.com. Mental health is essential, but protecting it has been elusive. This all changed thanks to Dr. Chris Palmer's new book, Brain Energy, where he shows why all mental health disorders are a result of damaged mitochondria. Mental health requires you to heal and restore your mitochondria, and I agree. That's why I wanted you to know about Energy Bits. Their algae tablets contain nutrients like superoxide dismutase, phycocyanin, and glutathione that are proven to heal, restore, and protect the mitochondria. Yes, even in the brain. The science about this is provocative and plentiful, but algae's role in restoring mitochondria has been virtually unknown until now. Energy Bits founder Catherine Arnston has spent 13 years researching algae, and she recently made a startling discovery. Science and nature have conspired to protect your brain and mitochondria with the oldest life on Earth, algae. Amazingly, mitochondria even evolved from algae, but that's another story. It's documented in evolutionary science called endosymbiotic theory. Bottom line, mitochondria are essential for your mental health, and Energy Bits algae tablets can help you achieve it. You can purchase Energy Bits algae tablets online at www.energybits.com, and if you use my discount code KKP, you get 20% off everything, and that's a no-brainer. And check out KKP episode number 330 with Catherine Arnston to learn all about Energy Bits and all about the mitochondria. She was a goddamn scientist when she came on the show, and if you were able to watch that on YouTube, she had charts and graphs that were absolutely mind-blowing. It was one of the best lectures I ever got to sit front row seat for. I love that. That'll be in the show notes as well, so you don't have to look back. Episode 330 was a mind-blower with Catherine Arnston. I personally love taking the Energy Bits during the day. My wife and I do. We don't give the kids Energy Bits. They got enough. But Recovery Bits, the whole family takes at night. And it's a phenomenal way to boost the mitochondria while you're sleeping, help the body restore, help heal the brain, and also pick up some of these heavy metals that they're tossing around in the atmosphere and help your body easily remove them. Check it all out, energybits.com, and code KKP for 20% off. Stress is a common factor that affects everyone in today's fast-paced world, leading to various issues. What if the answer to a better stress response is a key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium. Actually, I'm specifically talking about Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could be causing a multitude of other health problems. What sets Magnesium Breakthrough apart is its ability to support healthy levels of stress hormones like cortisol, a better balanced stress response in your nervous system and hormonal systems, and healthy production of GABA, the relaxing neurotransmitter leading to a more peaceful and better flow state. This means that the supplement acts like a brake on your body's nervous system, helping you to calm and soothe, promoting a better quality of life. But you have to get the right kind of magnesium. Truth is, most magnesium supplements you'll find in health stores use only the two cheapest synthetic forms. And since they're not full spectrum, they won't help your magnesium deficiency or do much to support your health. There are actually 7 key forms of magnesium, and you must get all of them if you want to experience its calming, stress-balancing effects. That's why I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It is the only organic, full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resiliency and better sleep, all in one bottle. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/kingsboo, and in addition to the discount, you'll get, by using promo code KingsBoo10, that's KINGSBU in all caps 10. There are always amazing gifts with this purchase. That's why I love shopping at Bioptimizers. Now, go to bioptimizers.com/kingsboo to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. Next, we're brought to you by happyhippo.com/KKP. Happy Hippo is phenomenal. My favorite kratom company on the planet is Happy Hippo. They have the widest variety of amazing kratom products that if you're buying just the powder, is just powdered kratom, exactly how I like it. I've experimented with a whole host of these things, from Yellow Sunshine to the Green Meng Da, and even some of the blends. And I can tell you that kratom is in a unique category where I truly believe it to be a plant medicine. It can be something that can be used improperly. So have respect, just like anything else. But that said, there are very few things, there's nothing that I can think of that causes my body to feel euphoria and to mitigate some of the old injuries, you know, to quiet the noise of my body, but allow me to focus in better. Kratom allows me to do that. And Happy Hippo has the very best stuff on the planet. Like I said, as long as you're getting the powder, there's going to be no other ingredients in there. They do have some ready to drinks and things like that. So if you're in a pinch or at a party and you want to just slam one, totally cool. But I think for the 99% of the time that I'm working with this, I really find joy in working with this. Pre-workout, I feel like it's a phenomenal tool for yoga or on days where I'm just getting into mobilization, hitting the Theragun on the body or the Hyper Ice, cold bath, stretching. The mind-muscle connection is enhanced when I'm on kratom in a way that allows my body to breathe into the sore areas and open up and elongate the muscle in a way that I just don't in any other state of being. Also, it doesn't mess with hand-eye coordination, so I find I can zero in and quiet the mind while doing mixed martial arts, striking, jiu-jitsu, you name it. And there seems to be a lot of benefit there in getting out of my mental framework. In fact, it would have been phenomenal during my fight career, because so much of my fight career, especially on fight night, I was in my head. And I know that's the truth for quite a few guys. It's not like only a me story. So recommendation for people that are in the fight game, if you're able to, this would be a great pre-fight. And pre-workout, you know, people talk about, you know, lifting weights, things like that. Love lifting weights, but I love lifting weights on kratom for that ability to dig into my body and just feel better. Why not have a runner's high right from the jump, right during that first mile? And then you get to mile two and it's like, holy shit, I'm even better. Holy shit, I'm even better. It's a phenomenal tool in the bedroom. Like, absolutely. It elongates our happy time together and accentuates the finish line. So if you pick up what I'm putting down, it's an incredible tool for both people in the bedroom. And I do find it to be excellent before bed as a way to just really unwind, relax, and knock out deeply. Check it all out at happyhippo.com/KKP. That is HAPPYHIPPO.com/KKP. And if you enter code KKP, you're going to get 15% off everything in the entire store. That's happyhippo.com/KKP. Use code KKP for 15% off everything in the entire store. Last but not least, we're brought to you by the homies Caldera and the Lab, the Regimen and the Icon. We're talking about Caldera. First impressions matter, and there are no two ways around it. What's the first thing that someone notices about you? In most cases, it's your face and, more importantly, your skin. If you aren't already, it's time to put your best face forward. How do you do that? By adding a skincare routine. And you know what? It's not hard. You just don't have the right tools until now. Clinically proven to reduce wrinkles, fine lines, and signs of aging, Caldera Lab is the leader in men's skincare and is here to save the day. Use our exclusive code KKP at calderalab.com/KKP to enjoy 20% off their best products. The skincare world is heavily female-driven and has long been the wild, wild west for men. Whether men can't find the right brand or simply lack knowledge and understanding of it, skincare is something that requires attention. Caldera Lab creates high-performance men's skincare products, and the Regimen leads off their product lineup. A twice-a-day routine to transform your skin, clinically proven to reduce wrinkles, fine lines, and signs of aging, men's skincare has never been easier with Caldera Lab and the Regimen. Luckily, inside this bundle, you'll find your skincare dream team: the Clean Slate, the Base Layer, and the Good. The Clean Slate starts and ends your day. This face wash leaves all skin types feeling refreshed. The Base Layer is your daily moisturizer to hydrate your skin and jumpstart your day full of confidence. And the Good is your go-to multifunctional serum at night that helps your skin look tighter and smoother, as well as helps reduce the visibility of wrinkles and fine lines. Every drop of this serum is packed with 3.4 million antioxidant units protecting your skin. And I mention this every time I talk about these guys. Y'all know I'm bald. I shave the head. I shave the face. The serum, I put that all over my head, all over my face. It tightens up. It feels phenomenal. It smells delicious. I feel like I'm invigorating the largest organ in my body. Right when I shave it, right when it's a little ruffled, I hit it with a serum and my body feels phenomenal. They even have an eye serum called the Icon. It addresses the three most common skin concerns around the eye: fine lines, dark circles, and puffiness. And I've talked about that before. Coming to Texas, cedar hit us kind of hard. One of the ways that showed up for me was puffiness around the eyes and dark circles. As I've continued to work with cedar in a homeopathic way and honor that plant, I've also been working with the Icon, and voila, no more dark circles and puffiness. Caldera Lab is made with top-tier ingredients, is in a great addition to your daily routine. Takes less than 1 minute morning and night, and is here to reduce your wrinkles, fine lines, and signs of aging. Get 20% off with our code KKP at calderalab.com/KKP. That's 20% off at calderalab.com/KKP by using code KKP. Jump into skin and first impression royalty with Caldera Lab. Last but not least, many of you have been looking for ways to get more time with me one-on-one. How can I work with you? How can you coach me? How can I understand more of the topics that you've been teaching for the last 20 years and really deep diving in the last 8 via this podcast? And Fit for Service is now something we've been doing for 6 years. As a founding coach alongside Aubrey Marcus, Eric Gazi, and Caitlin Howe, we've really dialed things in a way that is, quite frankly, more specific than any other form of teachings we've done in the last 5 years. Now, we're still doing everything we did before. We're still having these amazing events where we bring like-minded people together, put people through transformative experience like holotropic shamanic breathwork, and bring them outside of that firewalk on the other side together, arm in arm as brother and sister, in a way that very few things can do face-to-face. We really have aced that. In addition to that, now we're taking people on a deep dive through physical wellness, mental wellness, emotional wellness, relationship wellness, financial wellness, and spiritual wellness. And if any of those categories rings true for you, go to fitforservice.com and check out Fit for Service Academy 2024. We have intimate cohorts and epic summits, and I'm teaching the physical as well as one of the coaches in the spiritual. We're deep dive everything health related in the physical. So everything that I've learned from my long stints from football to fighting to longevity to healing the brain and everything in between from every expert you've heard on this podcast, I'm giving people that knowledge right here for 13 weeks. And then we still have these giant meetups where we get to meet all the other people taking the other classes and form lifelong friendships and relationships. We're going to have the end of spring will be in Montana in May. You can sign up now for the fall summit in Sedona. We'll meet at the end of September, but classes will start in June. So if you're looking to get in, go to fitforservice.com and apply now. And without further ado, my brother, Brandon Joe Williams. Brandon Williams, welcome to the farm. Welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thank you. It's beautiful here. I love it.
Yeah, we're very close. We were trying to get in end of the year, then January, then February. And then I was like, I'm born March 22nd. Get me in for the birthday. And it didn't quite happen as I was hoping because I have a library. So like all, this is our last non-video, but we're going to have a podcast audio only for those listening. I have a library being built that is, it's actually finished. That is the podcast studio. So I've got two nice leather chairs facing each other, you know, kind of like Sean Ryan. And then the video will be the same on online. So it's going to have the same background. I'm going to have my homie who did all our artwork on my wife and my sleeves. She's going to do a mural behind it on the door. So it'll be sick. And I'm super looking forward to that. And with all the fucking shit going on right now with unpacking everything and Costco coming in to build beds and whatnot, it's like, let's just go to the farmhouse one last time and get it here. So I met you through Luke Story. Well, first time meeting you, but I heard about you through Luke Story. And Luke is a dear brother who is incredibly like-minded on just about everything. I don't want to say we agree with everything. I think we do, honestly, mm-hmm. on every major issue from geoengineering to health and wellness to EMFs to all the things. And something that we've both been tracking is law. And in part because of the fact that, as you know, and we'll explain, laws are constantly being introduced that are designed to fucking take our freedoms away. And most people don't understand that. You know, most people have no idea that's the case, or you might hear it from like a guy like Alex Jones, and you're like, well, he said it can't be true. Even though it's, I don't want to say everything he says is 100% true, but when it comes to the things that he's dropping, a lot of the time they are true, you know? So first, you know, the arc of this show, I want to know about growing up. What was life like for you? What got you into what you're into today? And, you know, still living in LA, I think that's a great way to explain stuff too, because I think with the mass exodus being on, we moved here in 2017, and just saw, you know, the fucking wagon train coming out of LA and New York in 2020. So it was kind of funny seeing all that. But I get it. You know, I get it for all those reasons.
So many people. I mean, I know almost every, I mean, so many people I know from LA are gone. It's strange, actually. I stayed in LA because I said, you know, no government's pushing me out of this place. That ain't happening. If they think that they're going to push me out, they got another thing. I don't know how I'm going to figure this out, but that ain't happening. So I wanted to, so that was part of the reason why, and then I had the employment, well, to go way back,
Take us back to the beginning.
Well, the Employment Development Department was coming after my company that I had, so I was already kind of like, everyone's leaving, but I ain't, the government ain't pushing me out of here. When I leave, it's because I decided to leave, and that's the end of the story. And so I was already kind of that mentality at that time period. This was in 2022. And then the Employment Development Department started coming after me for they kind of trespassed on one of my properties that I was working at. My team was working at, and they decided to send me this bill. And anyways, you know, typical California behavior. I went to a couple lawyers, a couple of attorneys. You should just make a payment plan. Make a payment plan. It's so simple. And I'm like, make a payment plan for what? What the hell am I paying for? Why would I make a pay for this? This made up thing? That's not happening either. So I had somebody who was trying to tell me about a lot of this legal stuff for a couple of years, and a client of mine, and I was really nervous about it, and I kind of turned off by it. And that time period was the time period where I finally said, you know what, I'm going to call her and really see what she has to say, and at least be open up to her a little bit and see if. So I went to her house. She explained a lot of things to me, and it was sort of like just the very, very entry door to all of this information. And then I kind of went on a whole journey of self-discovery, going through laws and digging through laws and speaking to people and looking up the definitions of words, and then looking up the definitions of words inside of those words, and then finding definitions for things. People don't realize that there's a whole dictionary for legal terms. And when they're speaking to you, they're using those definitions, and no one knows those definitions. So I've learned, it's no different than learning another language, like learning French or Italian. Learning legalese, they use English words and Latin words, by the way, but it's a completely different language, literally a completely different language. So I feel, in my head, I've almost been learning French, basically. And the more I learn French, legalese, the more I realize that even the people inside the system don't know how to speak the language. They know how to speak a little bit of it, way more than anybody else. But I've gotten to the point where I speak way more of it than even they do. And that's why my stuff's kind of blown up and why my platform's getting so big, because I'm probably the first person, I guess, to ever do this. That's kind of where I'm at. And you know, I legally do not have a tax liability in any state. I legally, if I did own property like this, it would actually legally not be underneath the county at all. There'd be no property taxes.
I want to talk about all that stuff. Yeah. But first let's unpack some of that. You know, for people who have not taken a peek at any of this, you know, I mean, start at the beginning, wherever you want to start with. But, you know, one of the first eye-openers was like the contract of the birth certificate and the name in all caps. Explain what that is. Another example that comes to mind is, do you understand? When said in the court of law, right? That's a legalese, right? That says, now you stand under me if you agree with this. Right. So like, I want to unpack all this stuff because there's so much of this for the people that are just listening to this for the first time. I've had a couple people that understood Commonwealth law prior, but they didn't really unpack it to the degree that I wanted to unpack. So really dive into these segments. Fuck yeah, dude. Awesome, bro.
That's why everybody wants to be on shows, and I want to get on everyone's show. That's what I do. So definitions. So what legal or law or contracts are essentially is it's essentially warfare. Okay, it's a warfare of ideas, prior contracts, agreements, definitions of words. Definitions of words is like it's hand-to-hand combat. It's basically like the basic element of almost like the way you stand and like the most basic elements of literally like how you stand and like how you like look, and like it's before you even throw a punch. It's literally so basic that if you don't have it, you literally can't even swing. You can't even do anything, literally. So the definitions of words in real litigation, in real law, is the ultimate skeletal structure of the combat itself, right? So the definitions of words, let's say, for example, there is this thing where you have the term under and you have the term stand, and they both have different definitions. And when you say understand, it could be interpreted in this certain way, right? But in the real world, I don't think anybody even knows that. That's almost sort of like a, just people just say it, you know what I mean? But the thing is that you can just simply say that the term understand means the following definition. If they do not rebut that definition now becomes the definition for this particular UFC fight or combat, or even if it's not quite combat yet, it would just be the contractual obligation of which we're speaking about. So you don't have to, you know, there is a lot of this out there where it's like, don't use this word. And it's like, no, that's not how this is going to work. I'm going to show up. I'm going to tell you the definitions that we're going to use. And if you don't like any of the definitions that I say we're going to use, then we are either going to come to a handshake deal as to what definitions we are going to use, or we're going to begin combat. And I'm going to combat you until you use my definitions, period, end of story. I will not be hiding. I will not be going underneath the bench. I will not be running outside to not use these particular words that you, whatever. That's something very different about the way I teach it and the way that I think it should be done. I think that you define the words, especially when you enter the arena with truth on your side, and you enter the arena with and you do want everyone to win, and there is something kind of goofy going on. I feel that your nobility and your stance as an ethical, moral individual in terms of what's going on, because most of this stuff, you're the only ethical thing they've seen in years for most people entering this arena. So I feel like you have the right to lay down the definitions that are correct, that are proper, and that are moral, and that you have the right to unsheath your sword if that definition is not accepted. So first and foremost, I think that's a really good way to kind of break down that subject, because it breaks it down without having to break it down. Mm-hmm. It's very simple, you know? Now, it's not a matter of going in there and freaking out and screaming either. That's not good, right? But it's just like, look, here's the following definitions we're going to use. If you have a problem, let me know. I have a problem with this. And what's shocking is they don't. They'll accept almost anything you give them. That's the part that's the most shocking. It comes down to confidence, obviously, right? But the term understand and these various terms, you can just redefine them and you can use whatever definitions you want. And yes, there are definitions, but each individual transaction that you get into with contracts or litigation is essentially its own separate sovereign activity, right? So you can use the prepackaged stuff, the prepackaged definitions that are over here in the dictionary and all this, or if you would like, because contracts are basically God in the eyes of the law, whatever you manufacture inside of each individual contractual obligation or agreement supersedes or is higher on the scale than the prepackaged stuff that you may or may not want to use. So the true top tier is complete autonomy in terms of your contracting, complete definition of terms. Even the manufacturer of words, that there may not be a word that describes what you're trying to do in the English language. So you can manufacture a word or phrase or series of noises and just give that thing a definition, and then boom, now inside that contract, even within a courtroom, that definition becomes senior for that particular transaction. Mm. So it sounds complicated, but it's actually extremely freeing.
give us an example of how that might be used. And obviously we're talking about in court, that's the battle. You know, taxes are, I think, one of the most important, you know, but taxation is theft, period. And there's no two ways about it. Anybody there right now, in their fantastic book for people that are like, well, how do they build the roads? I'd love for you to check out Mark Gober's book on, what is it called? It is An End to Upside Down Liberty. Nice. And that is a brilliant book on government and spirit, and not a ton on the Commonwealth law, but a better understanding of what it would look like to be either a statist versus somebody who understands, you know, we are quite capable of wiping our own ass and getting roads put together and doing other things without the government holding our hand and forcing us to.
Yeah, and I've been on Brandon Thomas's show, Expanding Reality, a few times, and he says it really simply. He's like, you know what? I'll get my neighbor. He's in Texas. I'll get my neighbor. We'll get some asphalt. We'll fix the holes. It's not a big deal. It's a couple hours for, you know, every month or something to go out. And it's really not this huge monstrous idea. You know, there's some trash cans in the city that they put out, you know, paid for by the city. You know, it's a trash can. Put out a few trash cans. Make people who are in trouble for some criminal activity go around and clean out the trash cans and fill up the holes. Boom. Now you have a fully sustainable system instantaneously, and it costs no money, there's no taxation, and there's almost no administration needed at all whatsoever. For the libertarian side, you know, that's kind of like, it doesn't need to be complicated. It really doesn't need to be that complicated. What we have now is we have a bureaucracy where they're constantly trying to justify additional budgets, and so they want to, you know, all this craziness, and then it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier because that's what is rewarded. The crazier and more complicated they make it, then the more rewarding, then, you know, that's, the system is self-defeating and self-destructing. Literally, it's society destroying the way that the monetary motivation is towards chaos. So everyone's shocked that we get more and more chaos when the whole system is designed to motivate and create chaos and reward chaos. So the people who get involved in something like that are people who have a screw loose because they're like, oh, man, if I create chaos, I make more money. This is fantastic. And off they go.
And then, have you seen the documentary or read the book Shock Doctrine?
No.
It is fucking awesome. Highly, highly recommend it. And it really does speak to the business of war and the business of...
Yeah,
of shit hitting the fan, you know, that chaos is rewarded, and you know, when you just think of like we're running a regenerative agriculture farm, there's nothing about our government in any way, shape, or form that is sustainable. None of it. Financial, and there's no part of it. The military industrial complex. None of those things. None of those major pieces that comprise the way the world works in this last free country potentially. Is sustainable. It's not. So it is headed towards chaos, and it is rewarding that.
Yeah, it's the only place that can go is self-destruction, which will be interesting. I mean, some people think that's a bad thing. I'm not necessarily an anarchist or a libertarian or any of these things. I'm not sure there's really even a word to describe me at all. I think that as long as the intent to help is there, you can have a large government or a small government or anything in between, and if people like you and I were running a large government, people would love it. I mean, it'd be heaven on earth. It's probably too complicated and convoluted. We want to shrink it just because it's just too much to deal with. You know, it's like going into a company. What did these big successful entrepreneurs do? The first thing they do when they take over a company, Elon Musk or my favorite Dan Espena, the first thing they do is fire 80% of the staff because it's just what do you need all this for? It's just overloaded complication. Take the highest performers, train them, pay them more, and get rid of all the extra stuff, and then now it's just a much simpler operation. So it's just for our own sanity. Someone like you or myself would probably get rid of a lot of the over, you know, just for our own sanity. But the thing is that, you know, what I teach and what I go into and the depth of which I go into, like, for example, my platform's all about, like, what is the definition of all these various terms and phrases and things, right? Like, for example, if you look in, if you type into Google 28 USC 3002, and you'll pop right up and you go down to subsection 15, definition A, and it says United States means, and then it says a federal corporation, right? So it's really interesting. And then, you know, a lot of people are starting to realize this because it's one of the most basic things in all of law and all of existence. The definition of the word person means an individual, a trust, an estate, a partnership, association, company, or corporation. Did you know that?
Yeah.
You did. Yeah. So that's yeah. Like, this, well, this is common is,
this
knowledge,
is, this
right?
This is perfect because I don't think a lot of people listening do know that.
And yeah,
is,
yeah.
You know, where we get into birth certificates and things like that, it's very important.
Yeah. So if United States is a federal corporation and a corporation is legally a person, it's totally like a mind F, but... that means that United States is a person. And that's true because you look on a lawsuit, it says United States versus John Doe. You see that all criminal cases are like that. So United States is a person. And then what happens is that an attorney at law represents the client because the client cannot present themselves because the definition of client is an infant or person of unsound mind. So you have... United States is a person who is an infant or person of unsound mind, technically in law. So you have a lawyer that represents that person. So you say to yourself, oh, due process. I want to be faced with my accuser. Well, technically you are, because the person who's standing in place of the person called the United States is in front of you. And that's the way that that this statutory system says that it is due process, right? So, but the thing is that then you go to the Uniform Commercial Code, Article 9, Section 307, Subsection H, so UCC 9-307, and then you scroll down to Subsection H. You find out where is that person called the United States located, and it says verbatim. I know all this. We're not on a computer, but I know all this by heart. It says the United States is located in the District of Columbia. Now, you got to ask yourself, okay, where in the District of Columbia? What size is it? What shape is it? It could be a star-shaped state. Like, Texas is like, has the little jut at the top, and then it comes kind of around, and then it comes, it's got all the weird shape to the outside of it, right?
Panhandle, yep.
And then you have, like, California, which is more straight and kind of has a little bit of a curve to it. And but a lot of states, you know, especially in the middle, they're like square, they're like squares or rectangles. So you got to think, like, okay. Is it kind of goofy looking? Maybe like Oklahoma, where it's got the long handle to it, it's kind of long, or is it more like Tennessee? Or I've never found any information at all whatsoever. I don't think anyone really knows exactly. I think if you went into a court of law and you made them prove the actual shape, size, and coordinates of United States, I think you could win every single case on the planet, just that alone, because I don't think that information legally exists anywhere, actually. It's in the District of Columbia. We don't know where, we don't know how, right? And then you go into 42 USC 9102 subsection 18, and it gives you the definition of the term U.S. citizen, right? And it's pretty wild because subsection C in this definition says that it can be a company, a corporation, an estate, partnership, because that's a person. So any person that lives in the United States is legally considered a United States citizen. So that's also pretty wild. But subsection A says an individual is a United States citizen by law, birth, or naturalization. Law is by contract. Birth is born in this God knows where location, somewhere, who knows, in the District of Columbia. And then you have the term naturalization. And naturalization is the most mind-blowing thing ever. Like, literally, it is, like, naturalization is the craziest thing that I've ever seen. Pretty much, I've seen some crazy things. So naturalization comes from 8 USC 1101 subsection A23. And I know the whole definition by heart because I say it, like, 1,000 times a day. So this is going to blow your mind. Naturalization is the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. Literally, I'm not kidding. That is verbatim, word for word. What the and Title VIII, which is where this definition comes from, their definition of person's a little different. It's a little bit more vague. The definition is an individual or an organization. So if you were to replace the word person and reread it, it would say, naturalization is the conferring of nationality of a state upon an individual or organization after birth by any means whatsoever. So what that means is United States does not have a physical location that anyone can really nail down. The way that everyone moves into United States is by simply saying that they live in or are a resident of or domicile in United States. That's it. There's no other way you can live in the United States except by simply conferring it. Now, you can confer on a business. You can confer that on a trust. You can confer that on a company. You can confer that on a corporation. You can confer that on an association or a partnership or an individual. And it gets crazier because it doesn't say conferring it on a person of which you own or control. It just says a person. So I could actually confer nationality of a state, let's say Antarctica, on you, Kyle, after birth, by any means whatsoever, and if you don't actively rebut that assumption, you are now legally located in Antarctica. No joke. No joke. That's how it works. So recently you saw Joe Biden, he forgave this 250,000 illegal immigrants or whatever. All he did was confer the nationality of the United States upon 250,000 per sons after birth by any means whatsoever. But the thing is, anyone can do that. I could do that. I could sit here right now on this podcast and say, I confer the nationality of the United States upon every single person in this country who has not yet conferred the nationality. It's on a person, so wouldn't you be more specific than that? Let's say a list of names. After birth, by any means whatsoever, they are instantaneously naturalized. They are no longer illegal aliens. Mind-blowing.
Yeah, big time. Especially considering the... And for people that are like, that's a right-wing thing to talk about open borders and shit like that, I implore you, I'll link to this in the show notes, but Michael Yon, former Green Beret, author, brilliant dude, since moved to Texas, going to come on the podcast at some point. He did an excellent podcast on Sean Ryan's show. We'll link to that in the show notes. It's under 2 hours, very worth your time. And he talks about every culture coming through the Darien Gap. From China to, it's not Mexicans, it's a very small percentage of Mexicans, but people from South America, Europeans, people from all over the fucking world are coming in to the Darien Gap and getting bussed in, and some paths are harder than others, but that's a wide open, that whole thing's wide open.
Yeah.
And it's done so by design. And he has some theories on why that might be. I have some other theories on why that might be, but it is happening. That's the thing to wrap your head around, is that fucking, we're going to have... You know, millions of people come to this country and immigrate here in a very short period of time. Millions.
Yeah, and it's actually a lot easier than people think it is. If you look at 22 USC 212, it says that passports are only issued to U.S. nationals. Then you look up the definition of a U.S. national, which is 8 USC 1101 subsection A22. Definition of a U.S. national is A, a U.S. citizen, or B, a person who, though not a citizen of the United States, comma, owes permanent allegiance to the United States. You can open up a bank account with a passport. You can non-commercially operate any car or vehicle with a passport. You can travel with a passport. You can do anything you want. You can have a bank account. You can have credit card processing. You can live in this country like anyone else. All you really need, seriously, at the end of the day, you don't need a driver's license, you don't need a social security number, you don't need any birth certificate, none of that. All you need is a passport. And what people don't realize is that all you have to do to get a passport is pledge allegiance to the United States. You do not need to live here. You do not need to speak English. All you have to do is pledge allegiance to the United States. You can get a DS-11 passport application form. And I have a free document that I give away on my website that has more information. But if you wanted to keep it really simple, you could literally just have a little sheet that you attach. It says explanatory statement up top. And it says, I hereby pledge allegiance to the United States.
Do you need that notarized?
Ideally, yes.
Yeah, because there's a member of the state then that verifies.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about the driving thing, because that's such a big piece of this that comes in. But maybe we can save that. I don't want to fuck up your flow.
No. It's fine. Whatever. I mean, it's the driving thing is.
So I mean, but let's back up a little further. What the fuck happens when we're born and we're issued a birth certificate and a social security number and all these things? What's with the all cap lettering?
So a lot of people say the word straw man, this kind of thing. I don't like that term. You look up the word straw man in the dictionary in Cornell. Straw man is a third party that holds property in intermission for the sole purpose of transferring it to another. So it's sort of like the word straw man, basically, as far as I'm concerned, it basically has the same definition as like the term escrow, right? So I found a couple terms that I like a lot more. One of the main ones is the term public corporation, where if anyone wants to find that, they can find it under the term corporation in Black's Law. There's a subsection inside that definition that says public corporation. That's where you'll find the definition. Public corporation is a corporation that is opened by the state for political purposes, and to act as an agency in the administration of civil government. That's like almost exactly word for word the definition. So what it is it's a relay station. It's like a midpoint. Like, here's the government over here, this incorporated foreign federal corporation person located in the District of Columbia somewhere. We don't know where. They're lost in this jungle, okay? Then you have the public corporation, which is over here to the side a little bit, which is like a relay station. And then there's us as what they would call natural person. But that term, if you look up enough definitions for natural person, you'll see that there's a couple that say like could possibly include artificial persons.
Yeah, I was going to 100% wanted to dive into that. Yeah. I know that's already, that's a doorway that's been left open.
Well, no, you redefine it. Okay. So anytime, so they don't want you to say, man, and they get all freaked out. No problem. So I'm just going to put a little definition here, a little caveat, a little star. It's going to say natural person in this document, in this contract, in this transaction, in this court case. Every time the word natural person is used, it exclusively only applies to men or women and does not include artificial persons. Boom. And they're not going to have a problem with that. I've never had anybody have a problem with that. Boom. Now you just sealed off that door and welded it shut, okay? So now you can use that word freely without having to worry about the goofiness, right? So you have the natural person here, then you have the public corporation, and then you have the federal corporation, right? So that's basically the term that I like to use the most. It's essentially just a relay station. They use it. You can use it. The banks use it. And when you understand how to use it, it's actually really, really good. It's actually a really nice thing. You can actually manufacture promissory notes through it. You can do all sorts of crazy things through it. It's basically a bank, essentially. And when you learn to operate it and you take control of it, they have no problem with that. It's just a...
So in terms of, you know, relaying this back to the all caps, you know, name, that's a relay station, not a straw man. And that relay station has some gifts to it. It's not like you're, you know, pigeonholed in the prison of this thing where now you're fucked because your parents gave you a birth certificate and a social security number. There are some pros, but you need to know what those pros are and how to work with it.
If someone came along and tried to take away my public corporation, I'd be very upset. I don't want anyone taking that away. I enjoy it very much. I am currently in the process of forcing American Express to give me a black card, of which has no limit, of which I never have to pay. If I didn't have that public corporation, I wouldn't be able to do that. I can get any debt in the world to just simply vanish by having that public corporation. I have limited liability in all commercial transactions because of that public corporation. I have diplomatic immunity to some degree because I have that public corporation. When you learn how to use that and operate that public corporation, and you kind of just calm down and you stop trying to fight everything, you realize that it's actually the system is set up in a way where it's beautiful, man. I mean, I really don't have any complaints at all whatsoever. They operate the public corporation because you don't. As soon as you start operating it, they kind of just back off, just let you take the reins. Seriously, it's just I don't know how else to really describe it.
So let's talk about that, and this might weave into the driving bit, but driver's license, obviously, all caps, those kind of things. But you know, and you mentioned commercial driving with a passport. Not, as long as you're not doing commercial driving, this comes into the law behind the wheel.
It gets a little more complicated. I don't usually bring this up, but just to be like, just to have some fun on your show, it's commercial driving within the territorial boundaries of the United States, which no one can define where that's at. So it gets a little goofier.
I see.
But just to keep it simpler, yeah, there's commercial and there's non-commercial. But
right.
So even the commercial's goofy.
Here's
even
what I,
you know.
Okay, I just want to jump in because a lot of my interest in this has been around stupid laws. One of the first things you'll understand is in commonwealth law or natural law, you have to destroy someone's property or physically harm an individual or their property.
Or swindle them.
Yeah, yes. you can't be a swindler or a liar.
Yeah.
You can't fuck up somebody's body or their property. And if you commit a crime that doesn't check off one of those three boxes, you actually have not committed a crime. You've only broken a statute, right?
And that's correct.
And if you understand that, you could theoretically, and a lot of more people are doing these days, say, I don't need a driver's license to operate this car. I was transporting myself from A to B.
Yes.
And I'm not, you know, you can even have a notary. I know a lot of people doing this where you get a notary to sign a sheet of paper that basically says that this is who I am as a physical being in my name with lowercase lettering, and yeah. I'm not the driver's license guy operating this vehicle right now. So that doesn't apply to me if I run a red light, if I roll a stop sign, if I go 80 miles an hour in a 65, none of that shit applies to me. And it might take you a long time. You also don't have to register your car or pay tolls. And people are thinking like, you know, Ben Greenfield is a buddy of mine, and he was like, well, would that make us, you know, more injuries on the road and stuff like that? And I'm like, no, you still get in trouble if you fucking hurt someone.
Yes.
You're still going to get dinged, as you should. Right, I should still have to pay for somebody's car if I fucking total their car with my truck, right? Yes. That's what I should have to do. That still is the case. But if I roll a stop sign because no one's there and I get pulled over, which happened in my fucking neighborhood, going 15 miles an hour, and the cop pulls me over.
Here?
And, yeah, no, not in this spot.
I was going to say, because it's like, what the hell?
No. These guys are great. There ain't no stuff. No. Back in Austin.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. I said, we just moved here 2 days ago. In South Austin, in a suburb. Constable there, you know, and it's like, it was the first thing. That's when I really started picking this up, because it was like, those 300 fucking bucks, and it's a point on my fucking, on the driving record if I don't go take some 8-hour class and pay them another 250 bucks and sit through the shitty class, which doesn't teach me how to be a better driver. I'm already a fucking fantastic driver.
It actually teaches you to be a worse driver. I've gone to motorcycle racing schools, and the first thing they do is they unteach you what the state taught you. That's false. Anyways, shout out for the California Superbike School. So the way that all this works is so there's two different Texases. You've heard this story before or no?
No, but please, I've heard it. Yes, but I'm not in the way Dr. David E. Martin broke this down at a Texas for the Nexus event, but I'm not certain that you're going to go the same direction.
So if United States is located in the District of Columbia, what is the original name, the original official name for Texas? Do you know what the original official name was?
Tejas?
No, the Republic of Texas.
Oh, yeah.
That's the original. Like, for example, a lot of people don't realize, like Tennessee, for example, the original name for Tennessee was the Southwest Territory, because they landed and there was all those small little states, and then it was southwest of that area, right? So then it became Tennessee, and then now we have State of Tennessee. Or in Texas, it was the Republic of Texas. California was the California Republic, so it was flipped. The Republic was after the word California. With Texas, it's Republic of Texas, right? So naturalization is the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever. When you fill out voter registration, when you fill out for a driver's license, when you do these things, are you conferring the nationality of the Republic of Texas upon yourself after birth by any means whatsoever? No, you're not. It's called State of California, or State of Texas.
Mm.
Is State of Texas the exact same thing as Republic of Texas? No, it's not. Now, if United States is, and I can prove it, located in the District of Columbia, and State of Texas is a business registered on Dun & Bradstreet, has a Dun & Bradstreet number, where do you think State of Texas is located?
District of Columbia?
Bingo. So when you confer the nationality of State of Texas upon yourself after birth, by any means whatsoever, where are you now located?
District of Columbia.
Does the Constitution, the right to drive, the right to travel, the right to move your body, or even the Second Amendment apply in a foreign incorporated zone that is not legally part of the United States of America?
Nope.
Bingo. It's that simple. I mean, we can get into all the accoutrement and all the good stuff, and we can go on and on and on for hours. I could talk about this for, you know, days. The thing is, you are naturalizing into the District of Columbia. That's what's happening, right? Now, you can take a driver's license, and you can sign it without prejudice, which means that you reserve all your rights. You can write CO on the address, or write rule-free delivery, which means, you know, like some farmland that you'll never find out. When it says, are you a U.S. citizen, you can write no. And then if it's a paper application, you can cross out State of Texas, and you can write Republic of Texas. Now you're being issued a driver's license, but you never naturalized into the District of Columbia. Now the thing is, no one at the DMV knows any of this information. So you can do all sorts of goofy stuff, and you can still get a driver's license. But the thing is that you only need a driver's license to drive commercially inside of State of Texas, which is inside of the District of Columbia. And no one could ever tell you where it's at. So the thing is that how could, even if they did bust you, and even if they did do this, and you say, okay, you're under the assumption that I'm in United States, prove to me that where the United States is located. I know it's in the District of Columbia. I don't know where. You know more than I do. You tell me. I don't think it exists. I don't think there's any additional information as to where in the District of Columbia this thing is located, this person. I've never seen it. I'm not I'm not like thinking it's you know, I'm never going to find it. I may find it, you know, but I'm telling you, I've looked. I look at this stuff more than probably anybody on the planet. I've never seen any information that clearly delineates where inside the District of Columbia this place is located.
And if you're not within that, then the law doesn't apply.
Yeah, but you're there because you say you're there, because naturalization is the conferring of nationality of a state upon a person after birth by any means whatsoever.
I see.
Your companies, your corporations, your estates, your trusts, your associations, your partnerships, your ens legis public corporation, which is the name of your name in all capital letters, plus you as the natural person, are all located wherever you say they're located or wherever anyone else says they're located, and then you never rebut it. If United States says you are located in United States and you never say no, they just conferred the nationality of United States upon a person, meaning you, after birth, by any means whatsoever. You never rebutted it. Boom. Now you just naturalized. They naturalized you into the United States.
And how complicated is it to, I mean, we're talking about very basic shit like rolling a stop sign. The heavy hitters have to do with property tax, state income tax. And I grew up in California. 13.3% is yeah. It's steep, man. It's really fucking steep, especially when I was fighting and just trying to scrape by. When you start talking about things like that.
Well, you only have a tax liability if you live in or are a resident of state of California. If you are not a resident of state of California, then you would not have a state tax liability. So legally, I do not live in any of the corporate states at all. And when you start going down the rabbit hole of what is a state and the definition of state, you learn that the definition of state and the definition of nation mean the same thing. And then you start going down that rabbit hole, and then you realize that nation has nothing to do with location or territory. The definition of nation is a bunch of people. Basically, it's not a location. It's not a physical location. It's a bunch of people who operate together as a cohesive whole, and they have good internal tranquility, and they share and behave in a way that sort of adds to the tranquility of like external groups. So the definition of a nation, if I were to simplify that for you, it would be a nation that operates good and has good decorum and operates well within itself, and then has excellent external diplomatic relations. Like, for example, this property could be transformed legally into its own nation as long as you have good relations with your neighbors and good relations with local police and good relations with the fire department and good relations with this, maybe some people over here and some people over here. Technically speaking, legally, this is now considered its own separate nation, and you would be an ambassador at large for your particular nation because you're going out and you're creating good diplomatic relations with external nations and groups.
On that subject too, because it is something I wanted to bring up, and I'm trying not to jump around here too much because I do want to just hear everything you've got to say.
Yeah,
and
it's all good.
Take notes. I'm going to re-listen to this. I've heard about land patents, right?
Yes.
And a land patent, you know, when we looked into that, I don't know how hard it is or how easy it is to get done. But you know, basically with a land patent, it's kind of saying what you're saying. One of the drawbacks was you would no longer be under 911. So if I had an emergency, I'd have to seek out my own private contracts with the fire department and with, and I'm like, private contracts, that's what it fucking should be to begin with.
That's right.
Right.
Correct.
I should know the fucking sheriff on a first name basis.
Yes.
I should donate to him because I like him, and I should have his fucking access if shit hits the fan. Like, that's exactly how it should be.
That's exactly right. It's a private security force. It's an optional private security force. Now, keep in mind, the sheriffs are all voted in. I mean, they're voted in. It's not like the federal corporation just chooses whoever they want. That's how the police works. The police is on the corporate side, the commercial side, and then the sheriff is the original common law side. That's why there's these two different bodies of police.
There's a couple small books on why sheriffs are like the last since 2020. On how sheriffs are kind of the last stand from the Commonwealth perspective and defending of the United States Constitution.
They pretty much are. The only other thing I would say might be sort of like a last bastion of the common law world would be also the U.S. Marshals Service.
Okay.
Which is essentially the federal version of the sheriff's office.
Gotcha.
The U.S. Marshals is, oh boy, there's a lot of history there. Massive amounts of history, right? But if you really want a good description of what real, honest to God, American common law is all about, all you got to do is just watch an old Wild West film. and you see the sheriff, you know, maybe a deputy, but oftentimes not, just chilling. He's got two little cells. He doesn't do a whole lot. And a lot of times, if there's two grown men and they want to shoot each other, he takes them in the back, and he has all the women and children go inside. You hide in there, you know, and you say, all right, boys, you know, you're going to do your paces or do whatever you want. Basically, you have an infinite right to privately contract, which is true. Just you don't have the right to shoot into these buildings and ricochet bullets and start hitting kids and children and women. That you don't have the right to do. So as long as you guys are willing to come back here and shoot only at each other and you want to kill each other, by all means. By all means, and he'll just stand there and just be the referee, and they kill each other, and he'll just carry the dead body off, and then he'll be the one to bury it. So, you know, and then there is somebody who's running around and swindling people and that kind of thing, and then, you know, once Blue Moon, he has to get on his horse and ride out there and lasso him. He brings him in, and what happens? The town is the jury, and the town says, you know, you stole my blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, can you prove that? And it's like, well, yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then they figure out what they're going to do with the guy. And then they just decide, you know, they're going to put him in the stocks and put him in the town square for 4 days in stocks. Or they're going to hang him in town square or whatever they're going to do. They just kind of make it up on the fly, and that's what it does, and that's where he goes. And that's, I mean, there's no statutes, there's no books, there's no need. What is there to, it's like he's innocent until proven guilty. Everyone agrees that. He's swindled someone. Now you guys need to prove that you were swindled. It's been proven. He's now, this guy's a swindler. Now what are we going to do with him? Well, we're going to do, bah, we're going to make him paint the whole town with red paint because the buildings need new paint. Okay. So now he's painting the town with red paint. And if he doesn't, then we're going to shoot him in the head. It's real simple. Now he paints the town with the red paint, and then he completes his project, and then they say, thank you very much. You've repaired the damage that you've done to the society through your swindling. You are now free to go. That's common law. Yeah, it's the simplest thing in the world.
It is quite simple and makes a lot of sense to me. What doesn't make sense is how many new laws are going in each year and the legalese and language that continues to develop. It's the first thing I thought when I started diving into this was like, it is like learning a second language, daunting with the amount. And I just want to say kudos to you.
Thank you
for having the fire lit under your ass to deep dive this stuff, because, you know, I got kids, I got a fucking podcast, I got a bunch of shit. I'm a coach in Fit for Service, and regenerative agriculture was that thing for me where I was like, I got to stand on the shoulders of giants here because I've been doing this my whole life. I don't have 30 years of farming experience. And I just fucking just picked up a few Rudolf Steiner books 5 years ago and started diving into biodynamics. And how do I really make this work right now in a way where, you know, 20 years from now, I'm not saying to myself, well, I wish I had started that at the beginning instead of 10 years in.
Yeah.
Right. That time makes a big difference. Right. So this has been all teams, you know, go on that. What would be some of the purposes for somebody to get a land patent? Is what is necessary for you, other than just knowing the law, to talk your way out of a shitty ticket that doesn't exist? Are there any things there that you would say? Because some people say, like, denounce citizenship, do X, Y, and Z, and it's like, well, hold on, you know, what are we losing when we do those things? I just want to caveat this. We're one of the first persons I've heard talk about this type of law and still say you were happy with the relay team, still happy with the...
Oh, I'm thrilled.
Yeah. So, like, so that's a big deal to me.
Yeah. So first and foremost, the way that the property taxes is really simple, actually. Property taxes is essentially a commercial contract, a subscription service like Netflix that you were basically signed into through the title company or whatever during the real estate transaction, and they just assumed you wanted it and you never rebutted it. It's like a package deal for consulting. And inside that package deal was a Netflix subscription, and you just said, yeah, whatever, I trust you, just whatever, and it just like was part of that, and it's just like you've been signed up ever since, essentially. That's basically what happened, right? Now, that commercial transaction plays out like this. We're going to give you 911. We're going to give you ambulance. We're going to give you fire services. Plus, if you need anything, let's say you want to build a pole barn over here, or even right here, this one right here. So how deep do you want to go? Where are the sewer lines? Where are the electrical lines? Are you going to need power lines? Do you need to know how tall? Do you need to know what happens if it snows? Is there a certain angle and certain type of whatever. What if it snows really hard? You need to clean the not here, but you need to clean the roof. All these different things. So it's a subscription service where they're essentially assisting you to manage, take care of your property as well as any emergency services. You are basically paying property taxes as a tithe or an exchange for that subscription service. It is commercial, okay? Now, the 13th Amendment made involuntary servitude illegal, but actions speak louder than words. So what happens? You complain all year long, and then you pay, and then you complain all year long, and then you pay, and then you complain all year long, and then you pay. So in the legal world, you're under the assumption that you are benefiting from this relationship. You enjoy this relationship and you're paying for exchange for your subscription service. The thing is, involuntary servitude does not exist. It doesn't exist. It's illegal. It's like 25 years in prison. It's in Title 18. It's very clear, right? So the way it works is that if you were to clearly and unemotionally and unhostilely communicate that I'm no longer interested in this subscription service and I no longer feel that this benefits me, because the other problem with this relationship is the county holds senior ownership. You are the registered owner. If you look up the definition of an owner in law, there's a bunch of different levels. You're basically a beneficial owner. So they're essentially the trustee and you're the beneficiary. They actually have more power over, that's how they can come and take your property. So there's a contract and you're in this voluntary subscription contract, and then you fail to perform on the contract of which you're still involved in. They say you've breached the contract. This is the consequences, and they grab back the property from you because to start the contract, you had to give them primary ownership over the property, and you took like a lower level. You're basically like they're basically like mommy and daddy. If you really want to think about it in simple terms, like you basically gave the property to mommy and daddy, and then you're the son living inside of mommy and daddy's property. Literally, that's the way it is in law, right? So with a land patent, is really cool, because a land patent, you're basically saying like, look, like there was an original signed presidential declaration. If anyone goes online, they type in BLM space GLO space lookup. There's literally an entire database in the government Bureau of Land Management, and you can literally on that website type in a parcel of land. You can pull up the original documentation with a signed presidential signature right now, live for free. You don't even need a login. Then you can order certified copies of that original presidential signed land patent. You can download the PDF for free, or you can pay like $4, $5, $6 and you can get certified copies. What you're doing is you're saying all these previous quitclaim deeds and all this other goofiness that's all statutory and it involves the county, I'm done with this subscription service. And I understand that they help me build, they help me prevent electrocuting myself by digging into the ground and hitting electrical lines. They help me digging into the ground and not hitting sewage lines and then having sewage overrun my whole property, and then all the rats are going to come and then everything's going to be destroyed. They help me with emergency services. I understand all this. And I would like to willingly volunteer from this, and I would like to end my subscription service immediately. And the main way that you can do that is a contract has to have adequate consideration in order to be considered a contract. So you have to, it's assumed that you are being benefited, which is the definition of consideration. As soon as you say, I no longer find this relationship to be beneficial, legally there is no longer any consideration. Legally, consideration is the basic glue that holds together a contract. So once there's no consideration, the contract instantaneously falls apart. Period. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The problem is you complain and then you pay. So it's assumed in law, because actions are speak louder than words, that you are being benefited. You are being benefited, thus you have consideration. You have consideration, thus there is a contract. It's like Netflix. You can just unsubscribe.
Yeah. So you would do this through an email? Would you do this through?
I would do it through
the county clerk's office.
I would do it through certified mail. Make them sign for the parcel. Everything's in writing. Make sure that they sign for the parcel. Registered mail. So I would have signature confirmation. I would have certified mail, and I would have adult signature. So on the PS3811, when you send certified or registered mail, there's various additional services, and you can check all the little boxes for the additional services that you want, and it's like $2 or $3 for each individual service. The first one would be adult signature, which means I want an adult signature. That'd be the first additional service. Then it would be certified mail, which is the second additional service that you'd like on the parcel. And the third one is signature confirmation TM, trademark. That one, I forget exactly what that is. I think it's something more along the lines of like, they like verify that like an actual human being has to like actually physically stamp or sign. And you actually get that little green card. They have them sign for the parcel. They tear that little green card off and then they send it back to you. And you actually get that physical piece back, right? So that's evidence that they received your parcel. Now, at that point in time, what happens is you've informed them that you no longer find these things beneficial. You've informed them that you're no longer subscribing, and you're informing them that you are now taking. So the word ownership has all these different levels, but they're all pretty low level, right? So the actual legal term that you would define for you taking over a property like this is actually the word dominion. So you would tell them, look, thank you so much for your services, because again, my secret is don't be hostile. Thank you so much for your previous services. I am now no longer needing them. I no longer find them beneficial. You can say why. You don't really need to. You don't need to explain yourself. You do need to explain that part because that handles the consideration part, right? So you're going to say, you know, I thought this might have been beneficial. I've been learning more about it. Now I don't really consider it very beneficial. So at this point in time, please remove all security interest from this property. I will no longer be working with you. I will be creating private contracts with the sheriff's office. I will be creating private contracts with the fire department as needed. At this point in time, please release all security interest. There's no longer any benefit in this from me. You know, I'll give you, let's say, 30 days to complete this transaction. Please let me know via letter once this is completed. Thank you very much. And you know, if you need anything from me in the future or whatever, let me know. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to ignore that, or they're going to deny that. Often, right? Or they're going to say, like, this is weird or this is false or whatever. Now, at that point, you have officially walked into involuntary servitude. It was not involuntary servitude prior to that point. Once you communicate this and you communicate that it's unbeneficial and you communicate that that's the end, I'm unsubscribing, essentially. Now, if they say no, or they force you to continue, or they don't respond or anything at all, now you have officially, legally walked into involuntary servitude. Now, involuntary servitude in Title 18 is up to like 20 or 25 years in prison. So now at that point, now we have a criminal case against the county, right? So prior to that point, they can say like, oh, well, no, he was benefiting and he never rebutted the assumption of benefit and there was consideration.
Don't just stop paying taxes.
Don't just stop paying, yeah. Now, if you stop paying, that's breach of contract, you see?
Okay.
Now, when they sue you for property taxes, it's under the realm of breach of contract. What is the king or God in all of law? Contracts. The contract is the Lord. So when they say there was a contract and he was benefiting and he was paying for benefits and he never rebutted that and there is consideration, so there is a contract, the law doesn't look at it in terms of ethical and moral. They look at it as there's a contract here. He failed to perform. You failed to perform. But once you cut that contract, you say there is no consideration, thus there can't be a contract. There's no consideration anymore. And it can only be consideration if you consider it consideration. That's the beauty of it. If I force you to take this pillow, and I'm like, and then I go into a court of law and I go, oh no, I gave him this pillow, and you were like, that's the ugliest fucking pillow I've ever seen. No, I'm just saying, if you don't consider it consideration, if you don't consider this pillow consideration, it's not consideration, because otherwise it's just rape. It's just economic rape. I could hand you anything and say, oh, I gave him this bag of trash. And like, because I gave him this bag of trash, now we have a contract. And now he breached the contract. They can coerce you into anything. Consideration is the backbone. It's the spinal cord to everything. You are tricked, or I don't know if you call it tricked, but you are made to think that this thing is valuable. And you're like, oh yeah, this is consideration. And then one day you wake up and you're like, this isn't consideration. This is trash. Instantaneously, when you go, you realize that it's no longer consideration. There's no longer a contract, but you have to tell them that. They what are they going to do? They're supposed to go into your head and know that this is no longer consideration. And then you all got to think, like, just normal, like, okay, what would the county have to do, or how would the contract have to change in order for you to consider that it's consideration? What if they came and they trimmed all your hedges. They re-graveled your gravel. They came by and they
do the fucking road. That's for damn sure on the list of shit to get done.
So the thing is that all contracts are infinite. All individuals, all corporations have the infinite capacity to contract. So you can also conditionally accept. You can say, look, I'm willing to subscribe to this, but these are the following things that would need to be involved in this contract in order for me to feel that there's enough consideration to actually pay. But this is going to be a private commercial contract. You guys are not going to be the landholders, and I'm going to be the beneficial owner. That ends. I am taking, but if you would like to continue a purely commercial where I have full dominion over my property and you come onto my property as a commercial transaction, as a consultant or whatever, I'm more than happy to talk about that. It's the craziest thing they've ever heard in their entire life. And nobody at the county has any clue how any of this works. So they're just going to think you're a goofball or whatever. But in the eyes of the law, you're acting in honor. You're not doing anything. You're not freaking out. You're like, oh yeah, totally. We can have a commercial transaction. I'd love to have a commercial transaction, but in order for it to be consideration, it would need to have the following items. So that's really powerful because you go into a court of law and you're like, no, I would love to have a commercial transaction with these guys. It's up to them if they want to offer the consideration that I would like to have. I'm more than willing to pay for it. But the thing is that I'm no longer the beneficial owner, and I no longer consider what they're doing at this point in time to be consideration. I did make that clear in this parcel that they signed for 2 months ago, and the court will side with you because the thing is that you're totally willing to have a commercial transaction. It's all voluntary. Involuntary servitude does not exist. The 13th Amendment is very clear. It doesn't exist even in the statutory system. That's why everything's got to be all like you have to volunteer. You have to send in your own IRS forms. Like they don't ever come to you and tell you how much you owe. It's the whole thing. No one forces you to go in and get a driver's license. You think you need it, and then you willingly and voluntarily walk into a DMV. And then even beyond that, you pay to involve in the contract. And you say, oh, I have to do it. Where? Was there a gun to your head when you walked into the DMV? No, it's all voluntary. It's not involuntary servitude. And you say to yourself, well, if I don't do it, I'll be on the side of the road, and then this will happen, and that will happen. Well, that's a whole nother thing. You can win very easily in those cases. The problem is that when you sign up for a driver's license, you are stating, under penalty of perjury often with these things, that you are a resident of state of Texas. State of Texas has these particular traffic laws. When they write you a ticket is a complaint. It oftentimes even says it right on the ticket thing. Complaint means lawsuit. When I sue someone, I file a complaint. So it's a lawsuit for breach of contract. So simple. That's all it is. You naturalized into state of Texas. You are now under a contractual obligation because you voluntarily moved yourself into state of Texas through naturalization. You've broken the traffic laws of that particular thing of which you volunteered to be a part of. Thus, the police officer, which is a private security force for state of Texas, which is a private corporation, is writing a complaint or lawsuit saying that you breached the contract of which you voluntarily became a part of. So the thing is you didn't need a driver's license until you got the driver's license. That's the goofiness of it, right?
Yeah, and you're talking about how the ease of getting a passport. You can fly anywhere with a passport.
You can do anything with a passport. You don't naturalize with a passport.
Let's bridge the gap here. We're at the hour mark, and I want to keep this to 90 minutes so I can get back to unpacking and helping out the wife and kids. This is fantastic, though.
Thank you. I really
appreciate your fucking time.
I'm glad.
I'm chewing on a lot of this stuff, and it's actually starting to make sense of a lot of things that didn't quite make sense before, and it's answering questions that I had, around. I'm sure a lot of people are asking, like, everyone who tries this goes to jail. It's like, not if they're doing this correctly.
Yeah, so when you get pulled over, or let's say you get pulled over for going too fast, you're like, oh, yeah, I went too fast, right? So, like, it's the guilt and shame mechanism that basically you feel as though, yeah, I've broken the rules. I need to be disciplined. When they give you the disciplinary thing, essentially you're benefiting because you're asking for it. The shame and guilt system is really where everything starts, because the thing is that they assume that you assume Everyone's just under this, all these assumptions, right? So it's like, oh, I went over the speed limit. I'm a bad person. You know, yeah, officer, I blah, 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 you know. And then they benefit you by giving you a ticket and disciplining you because you, in your own mind, believe that you need to be disciplined to some degree. So it's just goofiness. It's all goofy. And there's a way you can sign tickets that just makes them null and void anyways. But a ticket is a performance contract. Because it's a promise to show up in court at a certain date. They even tell you.
Yes.
This is not an admission of guilt. This is simply a agreement that you will show up in court on a certain day, blah, blah, blah. And it has an option. It's an option security. The option is to pay a certain amount of Federal Reserve notes and you can discharge the performance contract. So it's a performance contract with an options financial contract or promissory note, right? So it's actually a financial instrument. And there's a way that you can sign financial instruments you just write without recourse. So without recourse means that once you take this financial instrument and once you process it, no matter what happens, I never have to pay it. And anything that's unpaid, I don't have any responsibility for.
Yeah, this is what I want to get into next in this last half an hour is taxes and the credit card thing is fucking mind-blowing. Even you know, a mortgage, right, would apply under that credit card thing just the same. So, you know, we've got... I don't know, 200, this land is paid in full, but back in Austin, you know, we've got another 250 grand, I think, to pay on that house, you know, 240, something like that. So it's not, you know, California prices. We've paid, got a lot of equity in that fucking house already, thank God. But there's a little chunk there that's still there, you know, so I'm very curious about this piece of it and how that flows as well.
I will explain it. So the definition of the word money means gold and silver coins, and it says right in the dictionary that it does not embrace notes, bills of exchange, or evidences of debt. Now, if you look up the definition of currency or funds, it says does embrace notes, bills of exchange, promissory notes, and evidences of debt. So money is gold and silver coins. Currency or funds, or other terms as well, include promissory notes and bills of exchange. You open up your wallet and you see there's just green things that are money in my wallet. Well, money is gold and silver coins, does not embrace notes, bills of exchange, or evidences of debt. Then you read the top of it. It says, what does it say? Federal Reserve note. Uh-oh. We have this word note here. Now, you go to the Bill of Exchange Act of 1882, and it says right in the definition section, verbatim, note means promissory note. Bill means bill of exchange. So whenever you see the word note, it means promissory note. And whenever you see the word bill, such as a utility bill, an internet bill, a phone bill, or a mortgage bill, bill means bill of exchange. Okay, so it's not money. What is it? It's called negotiable instruments. That's the legal term for what this is, or currency, or funds. It's also embraced in those as well, but it's not embraced in the term money. That's not the term that would fit for that. So the term negotiable instruments, so the term instrument just means contract or deed or just a written document. It's a very loose term, instrument, right? Negotiable means that it can be transferred from person to person with ease. That's what the term negotiable means, or negotiability is also another financial term in banking. So a negotiable instrument is an instrument, let's say I write a check out to your buddy over here, and I it's not negotiable because I can't give it to you, but let's say I write a check and it says payable to, or paid to the order of bearer. So it doesn't have a name, it's just payable to the bearer. Payable. So you write $5, you sign it to release it, and then it says paid to the order of, and you write bearer inside that line. You just created a negotiable instrument. I can give it to him, he can give it to you, you can give it to... You actually literally created manufactured cash. At that point, that would be considered cash. It's legal cash, by the way. So it's an unconditional order to pay that anyone can deposit, and you're the signer, and as long as somebody has the belief of which you have this $5 in your account, then that thing can transfer through the entire society without anyone ever actually redeeming it as the bearer to get Federal Reserve notes. It's mind-blowing. So when you first go and get a mortgage, you sign a promissory note. Promissory note, Federal Reserve note. They're both notes, right? They're both negotiable instruments. There's only two types of negotiable instrument: a promissory note or a bill of exchange. Promissory note is defined as an unconditional promise to pay, simple. Bill of exchange is very simple, an unconditional order to pay. You get a bill from the IRS. You get a bill from your phone. What does it say? Pay $77.48 by May 22nd, 2024. It's an unconditional order to pay. It's very simple. Bill. So what happens is that the financial institution that you have the mortgage with, you sign a promissory note to pay X amount over X date, X, you know, 5% interest for about 30 years, and then the final amount becomes the full amount of everything you'll pay over 30 years. Now, that promissory note isn't worth the value of the principal loan. It's actually worth the value of the entire maturity of the entire instrument. So that original promissory note, once you sign it, which actually the word signature actually means endorsement. You're actually endorsing it. And actually, there's two different ways to spell the word endorsement, depending on if you're receiving an instrument or if you're creating and giving out an instrument. So everyone sees in the back of their checks, E-N-D-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-T, endorsement, right? But when you're manufacturing a negotiable instrument, and then it kind of like as the issuer to go outward, it's actually spelled I-N-D-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-T. And you can see that in the Uniform Commercial Code Article 3, which is the Bible of negotiable instruments. If you want to learn everything in the world about our financial system, you just read UCC Article 3, and it's pretty much everything you'll ever need to know about how all this stuff works, right? So when you sign or endorse, I-N-D-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-T, the promissory note you just manufactured or brought into existence or completed the manufacturing of a promissory note or security, okay? Now, in law, that security has the same value as Federal Reserve notes. So what they do is, and you can see it, it's Section 16, Part 2, Part 1 and 2 of the Federal Reserve Act, which is also located at 12 U.S.C. 412 in the United States Code. They write what's called an application for notes. They take that security, right, that you just manufactured, and they write an application for notes, and that security is literally called a collateral security from the Federal Reserve. They go to what's called the Federal Reserve Discount Window, which you can literally look up online, and they have a whole website, Federal Reserve Discount Window, and they exchange the value of that promissory note as a collateral security for Federal Reserve notes, and then they turn around and they give you the Federal Reserve notes from swapping the instrument you manufactured back to you at interest. And what's crazy about it is that when they get paid on the instrument, they get paid the entire maturity value of the entire instrument. So on a $248,000 mortgage at 5% interest over 30 years, they're getting paid when they exchange or swap that instrument, the Federal Reserve Discount Window, they're getting paid the full maturity value of the entire note over 5% for 30 years. So they get back $430,000.
$500 on $300.
And they give you back your $300, or they pay the $300 to the buyer or whatever, and then you're paying back the full value. So they make, so on $250, if it's $500 after $250 or whatever, they get the $250 up front because they keep all the additional value from the maturity value of the note, plus you're paying back the $500, so they're getting essentially $750 on the whole thing, and they never paid anything out of their own pocket. It's actually illegal for banks to make any loans on their own capital stock, which I don't know. I would need to look at my website for a moment to remember exactly which statute that is. It's on my State National Resources page. If you type in banks, you can, or type in capital stock on a search feature, it'll go right to it, and you can look at it for yourself. So the thing is that the way in which you endorse the original instrument determines how the loan will take place. For example, let's say on your original mortgage, you would have signed that mortgage without recourse. Once they process it, which they can't deny processing it, by the way, you can actually litigate. They don't have the option to deny processing it. They may try to deny processing it, but if you know the law, then you litigate. And not only are they going to process it, but they're also going to pay you damages for breach of contract. They don't have that option, okay? If you signed it without recourse, you can just type that into Google, without recourse, it'll tell you it's a financial term that has to do with, you know, you have no responsibility for non-payment once the instrument is transacted. So just that alone, there's a lot more information about endorsements. But just that alone, if you sign without recourse, they can never, ever come back to you for non-payment. They were paid. They were fully paid. In fact, they made tons of money on it already without you ever making a payment. So if you sign without recourse, the bank makes a shitload of money. The seller makes all their money, and you never have to make a payment. Everyone gets paid. So it all comes down to this like illogical illusion that we live in, where we live in this ethical paying of, I got something, I need to pay for it, which is how a good person believes things should be. And they literally have this ethical paying of the fact that they need to pay for this thing or don't pay for this thing. But what they don't realize is the second they signed for it, the bank made a ton of money and the seller got all their money instantly. Like, the bank spent 5 minutes swapping that instrument, maybe less than 5 minutes, and they made hundreds of thousands of dollars on that transaction already. In fact, they got way overpaid. Even if you did without recourse and never made a payment, they got paid way too much already as it is. In fact, the way it really should be is you state the payee on the original instrument. So you would write without recourse, pay to the order of, and you would put your own name in all capital letters, Brandon Joe Williams. Below that, you would write by, B-Y, colon, and then that's where you would actually sign. That's like the signature of the person who's issuing this endorsement on this instrument, right? And then what happens is they can go to the Federal Reserve window and they can swap it for Federal Reserve notes, but then the only place they can bring all those notes is back to you. Now, you get the full value of the maturity value of the instrument. So there would be 500 grand that comes back to you. You would be the one to disperse 250 to the seller of the property, to buy the property. And then you would say, bank, thank you so much for being a currency exchange for swapping my promissory note for Federal Reserve notes. It's a note for note swap. That's all they did was they're basically swapping one currency for another, just like a currency exchange in Hungary. You go to the window and you want to exchange one currency for another currency and you pay them a small 4% fee or whatever. You say, thank you very much, bank. Here's a 4% exchange fee on the loan, 4% of 500,000, which is more realistic for 5 minutes of work. And then you literally got the house for free and you got paid for buying the house. And what's funny is if they do anything, once you write the endorsement like that, when you sign, you don't state a payee. It's called a blank endorsement. So it's a blank check. You're basically saying, you know what, I don't really want this thing or whatever, like whatever, whoever wants it can just take it. And you just kind of put it on the table and the bank goes, oh, thank you very much. They're not really stealing it. When you write the payee in the signature slot and they do anything with it besides bring those funds back to you, now they're stealing it. It's called purloining negotiable instruments, 25 years in prison. If they don't bring you back every penny, that's where we're going. We're going to start locking people up. That's the plan. That's the next plan, right? Because you can't. It's taken very seriously in Title 18 in the section of the United States Code on legal procedure and criminal procedure. It's like 20, 25 years in prison. I mean, it's to the level of literally enticement into slavery, forced labor, murder. Like, it's literally on that same level in the codes and statutes. Purloining and misusing negotiable instruments is like considered basically like the same as like sex slavery, literally.
Damn.
Very serious.
And then how would this apply? You talked about the black card, and I've heard different people thinking of different ways on credit cards. Similar thing when you're filling out the application for that?
Every time you put your credit card into a credit card reader, what is being manufactured? Promissory note.
Promissory note.
You are promising to pay. It says right on the receipt. It says you by doing this, you promise to perform as per the card member agreement. You look in the card member agreement. There's a whole section called promise to pay, and it says you promise to pay even if you don't sign. Even if someone else uses your card, you still promise to pay. It's all promise. You're just producing currency. That is what causes inflation in the monetary system. Every time you use your credit card, you are inflating the money supply. Hmm. It's a promissory note that is digitally swapped for Federal Reserve notes on the FedNow system, on the digital system. That's how it works.
So you got neither. So when
you're every time you use your credit card, you're already paid. You already paid because the manufacturing of a promissory note is swappable with the Federal Reserve notes. But the thing is that all promissory notes and all bills of exchange all have the same value in law. To the point where this is a bit of a mindfuck, but you can actually take a bill that you are being sent, you can actually endorse it in a certain way and turn around and use it to pay off something else. It's literally craziness. It's craziness. All bills are all positive value. They're never negative. So you got to think to yourself, it's actually a deposit account. So every time you get a bill and it says that you owe $3,000 from the IRS, you can actually think of it as that's like a savings account that has $3,000 in positive value in it, which is insane. Everything's upside down. So then it gets even goofier because then we go back to governments and all these different things and how the police have quotas. So they're given financial quotas and they're given Federal Reserve notes, which is evidence of a debt, which they're producing promissory notes all the time that are exchangeable for Federal Reserve notes every time they use their credit card. Then they have a positive value account credit statement that's sent to their house, and then they send in other promissory notes called Federal Reserve notes to discharge a positive value promissory note statement. And all of this is being manufactured as an illusion to motivate them to pull people over on the side of the road and give them tickets. It's like madness on top of madness on top of madness on top. It's like literally like to the power of four madness. Madness. And when you start to see the whole thing, it's literally, you just can't help but start laughing. It's a complete joke. It's so flimsy. It's not even a house of cards. It's like a house of, like, I don't know, hay. It's a joke. It's literally a joke. Like, cards literally have more structure than what the system has. The system is like almost air, literally. It's literally hilarious. It's a joke. Every time you sign anything, you are manufacturing a negotiable instrument that has the same value as what's in your wallet. Your ens legis, your public corporation is a bank. You are signing on behalf of that bank and bringing negotiable instruments into existence all the time. So people say making money. People say, I want to make money. What that means is, in literal terms, is they need to acquire promissory notes called Federal Reserve notes from another source. But the thing is that you are making currency or funds all the time. Every time you promise anything or put any credit card into a credit card machine or buy a coffee on a credit card, you are making currency and you are giving it away for free, and the banks are taking it for free and then swapping it for Federal Reserve notes, and then they come to you and they go, hey, you never paid this. Because you failed to perform on the original instrument, you failed to claim the value of that original instrument of which you created, so they just take it. It's not really stealing. It's not stealing until you claim it. Once you claim it, now it's stealing.
How challenging is that, you know, when you're talking about putting these things together? If the bank says no, you know, just out of curiosity, do you know people that have purchased houses in that way and had running issues?
We're doing some beautiful litigation right now. I'm doing one mortgage. I'm doing all my own American Express stuff. I'm doing one mortgage and one business loan that had been refinanced over several years. So what I'm doing with the mortgage, for example, is we're getting the every single payment with Federal Reserve notes that's ever been made on the entire account is going to be refunded to my client. Plus, the mortgage is going to be discharged completely. Plus, they're going to give my client probably $10 to $15 million in damages. And those damages are because of the fact that had my client known that he could have done a special endorsement on the original instrument, which is very easy. It's just writing without recourse and stating the payee in the signature page. He has now been essentially enticed into slavery, which is actually a section in Title 18, Enticement into Slavery. He's also been forced into forced labor, forced performance on a contract that is basically a slavery contract. He's also been involved in involuntary servitude. He could have very easily, the bank could have informed my client that he could have endorsed the instrument in a certain way and he would never have to make these payments. And now he's in the situation where he feels that he is in an involuntary servitude situation to the banking institution. all these various things. They're all like 20 to 25 years in prison. There's like 12 of them. Purloining negotiable instruments, securities violations for trafficking stolen securities, trafficking stolen securities over state lines, all sorts of good stuff. Because what we're doing is the way fraud works in law is when you call fraud on something and you can prove it, which like if the terms and conditions aren't clear, it's considered fraud. It vitiates the contract all the way back to the contract's initial inception. So what we're doing is we're saying there was fraud way over here. And it had my client known that he could have done a special endorsement way over here, then he would have done it. So through fraud, we're basically turning the clock back to the original contract and placing the special endorsement on the contract.
Mm, I like that.
That's how we're doing it.
Very fucking cool.
Yeah, well, it's fucking wild, right?
It's fucking wild, dude. It is wild. Well, where can people find you online to learn more? You talked, you know, mostly you've blown up on YouTube. You've got a lot of videos. I love the fact that you state exactly where this stuff can be found.
Yes.
But you're not making this shit up.
Normally I do video and I show everything and I show all the definitions live. Like if you look me up almost anywhere, that's how I do it. But I'm starting to do a little bit more audio shows and stuff because I have it all memorized. So I try to say it as much as I can. So if you go on my Instagram, so my website is onestupidfuck.com. It's kind of like a joke. I wanted something fun, right?
Is that number one or O-N-E?
O-N-E, right? Okay. So you can go on my Instagram. I have, for people who are new to this, I have 3 pinned videos on my Instagram. They're all 10 minutes long. One 10-minute video on nationality and taxation. One 10-minute video on cars and driving. One 10-minute video on infinite money and negotiable instruments and securities. And it's a really fun 10 minutes, boom, boom, boom. And then from there, I have just so much material. I have like literally thousands of hours all over the place. Every single show, Luke Story, Alex Zek was recent, Cal Callahan.
Yeah, that's my boy.
That's just recently, but I mean, the past year, I've done probably 100 shows online. And every single one is me showing as much as I possibly can, showing all the original things, going through the definitions. Everything's very, very audiovisual. So for people listening to the audio, it might not be as fulfilling because I try as hard as I can to ground and show absolutely everything I possibly can. And if it's more of a theory, I try to label it very clearly as a theory. Some of the older stuff was theories, and then it became real because I found and I grounded it. So there's a whole like research historical kind of thing going on here, and I'm kind of just going to leave all that and just, you know, people can see that I didn't explode from the ashes like a phoenix overnight. This takes some real digging and some real work, but it's very, when you start to latch on to some of the basic pieces of information like contracts and consideration and the definition of a person and how there is no involuntary servitude, the clouds open and you start to look and see, and it just becomes like, this is so fascinating, and I want to dive in because it is freedom to a level that like these rich billionaires, trillionaires, they couldn't even dream of the kind of freedom that this will offer you. And that's why I don't offer it as like a service. I feel like this is really a gift that my job is to deliver the information to you in the most fast, most fun, most enjoyable, most simple way possible. And then your job is to give yourself the gift of freedom. And there's no other way to do it, in my opinion. And that's why everything I do is free. I have a free course. All my stuff's free. Everything's free. I'm going to get paid on the back end having infinite money. I have no issues at all with that. I'm very happy with the way it is. So I will continue to give everything away for free.
It's been fantastic having you, brother.
Thank you.
We will run this back for sure.
Thank you.
For certain. Thank you so much for your time, Brandon.
Thank you.